Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Welcome back to Nighttime Talk with myself, AJ Walsh, sitting in for Niall Boylan tonight. Now, I've got an interview tonight. I've got a special guest. His name is Michael Murphy. He's got a new book coming out. It's called Pop Music Management: Lessons from the Managers of Number One Albums. He previously worked in various roles in the music industry, starting in the Dublin DIY music scene before working for major labels in London and New York and then managing music acts in the US and Canada. He now teaches music industry and entrepreneurship at the Institute of Art, Design and Technology in Dublin. He's about to release a new book that analyses pop music successes to understand the roles of managers and management. To tell us more, Michael Murphy joins me now. Hi, Michael. How are you doing? Hello.
AJ, how you doing, AJ?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I've been thrown in at the deep end. Niall was meant to be here tonight, but I'm just filling in. So go easy on me, all right?
Well, I'm going to echo one of the previous people and say you're playing a blinder.
Oh, thanks, Michael. Thanks. You're very good. Hello?
Hi.
Oh, yes, you're still there. You're still there.
Yeah.
I think we might have a problem on one of the lines, but don't worry. We could always call you back if needs be. So, Michael, tell me a little bit about the background to your book.
Well, the background to my book is that I'm one of those nerds, AJ, that grew up listening to the charts every Sunday night.
Nice.
And myself and my brother bought a notebook and we'd write down the top 10, and then we'd go outside of our house in Dean's Grange, and there were some girls slightly older than us who we knew loved pop music, and we'd be there and tell them, oh, David Bowie's gone to number one or whatever it was. So I just loved the charts, I loved music, I loved records, and long story short, I went to the Reading Festival in 1989.
Okay.
And I never came back. I never came home.
Oh, so you stayed in the UK, I'm taking it. You didn't stay at the festival.
No, unfortunately. No, they cleared out the festival. No, I stayed in England, and, you know, within a week, very, very luckily, I was working for Richard Branson.
Wow.
At Virgin Records.
Wow.
So,
very nice.
Yeah, through an Irish friend. And, you know, that gave me real life experience of major labels, of people with big budgets, of pop stars. And I then got headhunted from there to record label that was set up by the guy who had owned Chrysalis Records. Mm-hmm. And he moved me to New York. And, you know, my job was to go and see bands. I was an A&R person or a talent scout. So I went all over the band, you know, looking at bands. I got the tour with the Foo Fighters, with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, with Bryan Adams.
Not that you're name dropping or anything here, no.
No, but just to give you a bit of a context. So, I worked in the industry, but I was always just a fan.
Yeah, okay.
And I then started a management company, got lucky and, you know, retired. I came back here to Dublin to thought I'd do a course. I've spent my whole life kind of nurturing other people's talent.
Yeah.
I'd see, you know, do I have any myself? And I'd like to write and study and research music. So I ended up in the academic world lecturing on the music industry.
Okay, amazing. So, like, you've got lots of experience, like all of those names, like Foo Fighters, stuff like that. Like, I mean, you've really got a lot of experience. So what is it that you went and studied? And then what are you teaching now in, is it the Institute of Arts, Science and Technology? Is that the one in Dunleary?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So I teach the music industry. I teach people the type of skills they would need in the music industry.
Yeah.
But AJ, you know that if you've got marketing skills that you learned by studying Adele or Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. you can apply that to anything. So the music industry is just a great way for studying any business or for kind of finding your own motivation for maybe your own project or starting your own business. So I teach entrepreneurship and I teach the music industry.
Amazing. Okay. It's really, really interesting. I'd love to go and study something like that, but it's probably way above my, I don't know, intelligence.
No, it's absolutely not. And I would have loved to have, you know, studied that before I had my career. I wouldn't have done, you know, I wouldn't have made all the decisions that I made.
Yeah. Had you actually gone and done that. So what, what inspired you to write the book? But did you start researching it at a specific time, or was it just a case, when did you decide you were actually going to write this particular book?
Well, this particular book came out of a conversation 4 years ago.
Okay.
With the big English publishing company, Routledge. They were looking for books. They were looking for ideas. They came over. I had a meeting with the commissioning editor, and I said, no one's done a book about the number one albums in the States. The albums that went to number one and the charts last year, AJ, they had their birthday. They were 60 years old.
Okay.
And I thought, what would happen if you went through every album that went to number one and you looked at who were the managers? You know, who were the first women managers to get to number one? What's the story of black entrepreneurs at the number one spot? You know, did artists kind of manage themselves, or did they leave it up to someone else?
Give me something interesting out of there. Like, who was the first woman manager that went to number one? Give me some of these interesting points that we would find in the book.
Okay, first number one female manager is a woman called Arlene Rothberg, who doesn't appear in most of the history books.
I'd imagine there's quite a few of them that don't appear in the history books because they're behind the scenes.
Yeah. Very much so. But, you know, now managers are superstars. Managers have a high profile. But certainly in the 1970s, and Arlene Rothberg managed Carly Simon.
Okay.
So that was a big breakthrough. And then the next female manager was a woman from England who managed Janis Ian. And then the huge breakthrough were the Go-Go's, who were managed by a woman who'd never managed the band before, and she was just a fan. And she sold her car to help the Go-Go's go on the road with Madness in the UK. And, you know, the book is full of those passionate stories of people who sometimes had no experience of managing bands, and they decided to just give all that they had.
Do you think that when you were managing bands, did you have any experience before you started?
I didn't on the first band,
but
I had after that.
Yeah.
And
so you learned on the job.
Exactly. And I really think that every Leaving Cert student in this country could manage a band that goes to number one or could sell a million records.
Wow. Okay. So why do you think that then?
Because they've got so much knowledge. Like, if you talk to people who are 16, 17, 18, like, they don't just know what's in the charts now. They know about the Beatles. They know about punk. They know about the history of hip-hop. Like, they're scientists.
Yeah.
They've got such a wide knowledge. And they're also, they're users of social media. They know marketing. They know style. And honestly, I think any 18-year-old could manage a band. And in fact, I think they should be. I think every 18-year-old should have a record label.
So that could be something
genuinely
they do in transition year, though. It could be.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great. So get them at 15 or 16.
Yeah. But I mean, even younger. My son, he's 13 and he knows absolutely everything there is to know about heavy metal and death metal and metal and whatever other metal, you know. And again, when I was 13, I started in pirate radio stations when I was 13. I knew everything about hip hop, dance music, you know. I mean, I don't know as much now, but back then, it's like your brain can just fit all of this. So when you were back in the day with your brother and you were writing down all the number ones, all of that was like stuck in your head then. You know, you had a catalogue of all of the number ones, and that's then what led you to be able to write this book then.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that certainly was going into my brain some way without me realising it.
Yeah.
And then it meant, you know, when I had the opportunity to work for major labels, you know, you have to do interviews or you have to have conversations, and I was able to talk about music because it was my thing. It was my passion. So I went really deeply into it. And I love that your son, you know, is an expert in death metal and, you know, and hard rock. But, you know, what a great foundation.
Yeah.
And, you know, better that you're listening to music than all of the other things
that you could be doing. Yeah. Agreed. Absolutely. And then can I just ask you then, have you noticed then a massive change? So like we're saying, like back in the 60s and 70s, the managers wouldn't have been heard of very much, whereas now the managers are actually superstars themselves. So have you noticed a big, massive change in music sort of going from that time up to the present day? And especially, you know, with changes to streaming services and stuff like that, are people using managers as much as they used to? Are artists using managers as much as they used to?
It's a great question, and it's really, really important, because the landscape of the music industry is really changing. And there's been kind of a path that's gone in two directions. And one is that we're finding really, really brilliant entrepreneurs who are also artists. Taylor Swift, perfect example. Mm-hmm. She's involved in every single major career decision. You go back a little bit further, Kurt Cobain. People have their own opinions about Kurt Cobain, who he was, what he did, but he was completely involved. Like, he was a brilliant business person,
yeah,
just like David Bowie was. So now it's getting very, very centralized. You've got big, powerful management companies who tend to manage loads of artists. Mm-hmm. The downside is you mightn't get individual attention. The upside is you're working with really powerful corporations. So it's getting more concentrated.
I get you. And did you find any common misconceptions about what managers actually do for their artists?
Yeah, yeah. That, and in fact, the thing that I learned, AJ, was that managers are like fingerprints. Mm. Everyone is different. You know, they really, there's no common set of skills or traits that all managers have. They've all got a different approach.
Okay. And do you have any failures in terms of what managers have done? Was there any examples of failures?
Well, because I was looking at albums that went to number one.
Yeah.
I was almost steering away from failures.
But, yeah, sure.
You know, that's a brilliant question. There still were.
Yeah.
And where the failures happened were where there was a difference of opinion between the artist and the manager. And, you know, one of the great examples in the book to me is John Denver. And John Denver became an icon by looking like kind of the boy next door. He had the glasses, he had the hat. He didn't look like showbiz flash. And yet he fired his manager.
Okay.
And his manager thought, but I got this guy to number one. I was doing a brilliant job.
So
I
why
took
did he
him
fire
from
me?
Exactly. And so I think, you know, that, you know, you mentioned failures. The failure can be when the manager doesn't look in the mirror and think, am I really doing this for the artist? Is the artist happy? And they think, just because the checks are rolling in, that the artist must be happy or satisfied. Whereas the artist might be looking for something that's intangible, like a hand around the shoulder, or, you know, what do you think, John? Or, you know, what should we be doing? So it's very, very difficult, I think, for some people, entrepreneurs in particular, who are really driven. They don't stop and check in and look over their shoulder.
Okay. So with that said, what do you think is the key to maintaining a healthy partnership between manager and artist?
It comes down to one thing, and that's, do you really care about the artist? You know,
yeah.
Is the artist your first thought? And I saw firsthand with Bruce Springsteen, for example, the last thing that Bruce Springsteen sees before he walks on stage is his manager.
Okay.
And the first thing he sees when he walks off stage is his manager.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a husband and wife team that look after Springsteen, and they're there with him to make sure he's okay, you know, emotionally, as well as, you know, from a business point of view, and that there's a familiar face there. So I'm so happy that you're thinking like that. You know, what should a manager have? And I really think it comes down to care. Mm-hmm. Do you really care about your artist?
And with that said, I mean, is it a case where emerging artists, I mean, if you're a manager, let's say, and you've got emerging artists and you've got bigger artists on your books, is it possible to give them the same level of attention and the same level of care? If, I mean, it's very easy to give all of your energy to Bruce Springsteen, someone like that, who's like absolutely massive and you're making loads of money from that. But if you've got an emerging artist who maybe that's a bit more difficult and, you know, that's not really where you're getting your bread and butter from, and you've got bigger artists on your books, is that going to differ how they're treating each of their artists, or
yeah,
how they can
sure.
spread themselves, if you get me?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you've got a superstar client, they're not going to be happy if you take on some new act and, you
yeah.
know, you're not there when they phone you. So, you know, in what those companies do is they'll generally hire a person and they're designated to look after the new act. So the new act has access to someone every day. It's not the head of the company, but it's someone who works for the company and they're there to look after them. So that's what they do. You hire someone in to look after your new artist. So you're not deflected from looking after the superstar, because guess what? The superstar, as you mentioned, they pay the bills.
Yeah.
And if they get upset, they might say, guess what? You're fired.
Yeah, and I mean, then nobody's going to gain from that. When is the book actually out? I don't think it's out yet. It's out next week.
Yeah, the book is out on February the 10th.
Yeah.
Monday, we're launching it in Whelan's, and then it will be out in the world. It's available online now, because that's how the world works. The release is February the 10th.
Okay, and what's going on in Whelan's then? Is it just going to be like a book signing? Is there going to be bands? What's going on?
There'll be a book signing, and we're doing a panel discussion.
Oh, nice.
So we've got people, figures who I feel were important in the Irish music industry. We've got Elvira Butler. I'll be interviewing these seven guests in front of the audience. We'll record it as well, because the stories of the great managers, the great entrepreneurs, they need to be recorded, AJ, or we never learn from them. So Elvira Butler will be there. She did something extraordinary. She brought bands to Cork. She brought The Cure, The Specials. She brought the early U2 gigs. But she was bringing them to a dry venue, but she was getting over 1,000 people every night.
Wow, okay. So we could definitely learn from her then, hey?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And she was pure DIY, yet she was dealing with huge bands, all the way up to The Cure.
Nice. And what time is that then on February 10th, just in case anybody wants to go along?
Lovely. That's at 7 o'clock on February the 10th in Whelan's. Admission is free. And it'll be a panel discussion with seven people from various parts of the Irish music industry telling their stories.
Lovely. Before you go, do you have any cool stories about from when you were managing bands? Like, you listed some of the bands that you worked for. Is there anything, just a cool story about your time as a manager, instead of talking about other managers?
Yeah, I guess for me, the coolest thing was getting to stand on the side of the stage and to watch my band. And the other coolest thing was to get to design T-shirts. Like, I'm not a designer.
But you had to do everything.
Exactly. Or you get the opportunity, if there's no idea for the video and you have to make a video, I would come up with an idea, and then to my surprise, that's not bad, we'll do that. And then we'd end up in a video, that was on MTV.
With your T-shirt design in it, with your band in it.
Exactly. Not all at the same time sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, seeing someone walk down the street with a T-shirt that I had a hand in designing, there's no bigger buzz, I must say.
Oh, wow. So T-shirt design actually is what you should really get into. No, I'm joking. And then to go back to what you said about all teenagers should get the opportunity to manage a band.
Yeah.
Do you think that we could start some sort of campaign to get that, to get something like that into transition year? Because I think it's great to focus these kids' minds on music, because like you said, listening to music is so much better than anything else they could be doing, And I think that would be a great idea if they could do it could be part of business studies as well, couldn't it? Managing a band.
Yeah, now, to be honest, this is your idea. I wouldn't have thought of this, but I think it's a brilliant idea.
Well, let's do it.
That you would, the transition year, why not? Like, as you said, your son and probably your son's friends and you at that age, you know so much about music. So why not put out a record or a CD or a download by other talented young people, because the problem is we've so much musical talent. You know this, AJ, in Ireland, but we don't have enough managers.
Yeah.
So let's give let's give young people an opportunity to flex that management muscle by trying to help developing bands. I love that idea. I'll be your intern for that.
Yeah, brilliant.
I'll
okay, let's go for it. You heard it here first, guys. So thank you so much. That's Michael Murphy. He's got his new book coming out on the 10th of February. You can go to the launch, where he has a panel of seven people. It's at 7 p.m. in Whelan's, and the admission is free if you want to go along. That's Michael Murphy. His new book is Pop Music Management: Lessons from the Managers of Number One Albums. Thank you so much for joining me, Michael. I really appreciate your time this evening.
Oh, thanks a million. What a pleasure.
Thank you, Michael. You take care. Thank you to everybody for listening. Thanks for going easy on me tonight. It's AJ Walsh in for Niall Boylan. He will probably be back tomorrow night. Let's hope he's back in the hot seat. But if not, someone else will be standing in. It'll be either myself or Gary Brennan. But thank you all for your calls and texts tonight. And we will talk to you tomorrow.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.